UK Wine Show, show number 6. G'day, my name's Chris Scott and welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 6. This week we've got Matt and Turner from Riedel. Riedel, one of the leading glass manufacturing companies in the world, and they've got one of the highest regarded specialist wine glass range. We're going to find out a bit about the shape and how that can change the taste of wines. And as usual, I believe that with a wee bit of knowledge, you can improve the quality of your drinking. So hopefully you'll be able to pick up some tips and tricks about what glasses to use when you're drinking. But before we get into that, let's have the news with Jane Scott.
A Balthazar of 1991 Escalier Estate, The Terraces, has been sold for what is possibly a record-breaking price for a bottle of New Zealand wine. The bottle, which is equivalent to 16 normal bottles, was sold at the annual Hawke's Bay charity wine auction for a huge $11,000 New Zealand dollars. The 1991 vintage, the first from the boutique winery's highly rated The Terraces vineyard, is a four-varietal blend of Malbec, Merlot, Cabernet Franc and Cabernet Sauvignon. Meanwhile, Russian wine fans are having to forgo their favourite foreign wine after a bureaucratic blunder has left restaurants and off-licences virtually empty of bottles. The problem arose after new excise stamps, which are compulsory on all alcohol imported into Russia, arrived too late for many restaurants and shops to get their bottles relabeled by the July 1 deadline. As a result, the bottles had to be removed and sent back to warehouses because only the importer is allowed to restamp them. According to The Guardian, one central Moscow off-license had only 3 bottles of Californian red wine and a bottle of cognac to sell last week. Let's hope that when the UK introduces duty stamps on spirits from the 1st of October this year, that things go a lot more smoothly. And finally, Chateau Margaux and Latour are clocking up the most expensive prices ever for Bordeaux wine sold en primeur. As a result of the 2005 vintage being held as one of the greatest ever, these prestige first growths are releasing their wine at more than £4,000 a case, knowing that demand will far outstrip supply. Generally, prices for the first growths this year are up by an average of 300%. En primeur is a wine trade term for wine that is sold before it's bottled. That's all for the news this week. Over to you, Chris.
Before we get into the interview, I think I should explain there is some conjecture about the basic principles of taste. In general, we perceive 5 basic taste sensations: sweet, salty, bitter, sour, and umami, which is sort of a meaty, savoury taste. With wine, there's 3 taste sensations, which I was taught. Sweetness was at the front of your mouth, sour or acidity was on the side, and bitter was on the top of the back of the palate. However, in Jamie Good's book, The Wine Science, he said that this was actually an urban myth. He reckons it was a mistranslation from some German work that was done in the early 20th century that said very small differences between different parts of the mouth. That was mistranslated to mean the taste was different in different parts of the mouth. Jane, myself, and Charles tasted a range of 4 wines beforehand with Martin just to see if this was the case, and both Jane and Charles noticed considerable differences, and I noticed a wee bit of difference as well. So it's hard to know what's right and wrong. You've got a well-respected author saying one thing, and I've heard of other cases as well where sommeliers have noticed big differences in the shape of the glass affecting the wine as well. The only solution I can say is try a tumbler and a few different glasses and see whether you can notice a difference. Anyway, have a listen to the show and see what you say. We're here with Martin Turner from Riedel. He's been with Riedel now for 10 years and is responsible for the retail and on-trade for London. Martin, how are you?
Yeah, very well. Good to meet you, Chris.
I think what we'll do is we'll start off with a bit of a history. I understand it's your 250th anniversary this year.
Yes, they started in 1756, back in Bohemia, what's now the Czech Republic. Ended up in Austria last century, which is where their main production is. 2 factories in Austria, and they've just welcomed their 12th generation.
You guys have been making glasses now for quite a while. Have you always had a real focus on glasses, or where's that come from?
No, when they started, they were industrial glass manufacturers. It was only last century, the 9th generation, Klaus Joseph, who became interested in developing different shapes for wine glasses. Up until then, they'd done lots of giftware and suites of glasses, as a lot of the glass companies were doing. But if you bought a suite of glasses from Riedel or from anyone at that time, you would just get a suite of glasses that, although different sizes, a glass for water, a glass for red, a glass for white, one for port, sherry, champagne flute, they'd all be much the same size. It was Klaus Joseph who pioneered the idea of different shapes and sizes for wine glasses.
How did he get his ideas from?
Well, he was a wine drinker based in Europe, so he used to visit the winemakers a lot. And he noticed that the different wine producers and the winemakers all drank from different shape glasses. The Burgundians had their favourite shape, Bordelais had their favourite shape. In cognac, they used to taste from a small tulip-shaped glass, the Spanish Capita for sherry. So he started looking into whether there was something in this. And because he had the capability to play around with glass shape, he could design and produce anything he wanted to. That's how he started.
Okay. So he was looking at the wines and then seeing what sort of shape was matching the wines. Is that to do with the way the wine works in the mouth and the palate?
Yeah, exactly. It's all purely a mechanical delivery of the wine and spirit from the glass onto your tongue, which I know sounds incredible. Most people, if you went to them and said, this wine will taste different from three different shaped glasses, they won't believe it's true. But it's something you can try at home. Just get out a straight-sided tumbler, maybe a brandy balloon, a martini glass, champagne flute, pour some red or white wine into them, and have a go and see what an amazing difference the shape makes.
So you've got different glass shapes, but how does it affect the nose and palate? What's going on in your nose and palate?
When you're tasting wine, or in fact when you're tasting food, your enjoyment comes primarily from your nose and not your tongue, as a lot of people think. The tongue's actually a very primitive organ for tasting. It just picks up five things. Your nose, on the other hand, is a very sophisticated organ and can differentiate between 10 to 20,000 smells.
Gosh, that's quite a bit.
Yeah. It's something, again, you can try at home. Hold your nose, have a sip of wine, release your nose, have another sip of wine, and it'll taste different. Yeah. When you have a cold, you can't taste anything. Everything tastes of cardboard.
So what does your palate have? What's going on in the palate?
Well, the palate has different perception on different parts of the tongue. You pick up sweetness on a different part from where you pick up sourness, for instance.
That's more like the acidity of the wine?
So what we're looking at is sweet, sour, salt, bitter. And there is a fifth taste called umami, which has always been around, recognised by the Eastern world, not so much the Western world. It's that sort of savoury, yeasty taste. But when we're looking at wine, we can also discount salt. So we're just looking at three things. We're looking at sweetness from fruit, we're looking at acidity, and we're looking at any bitterness that comes from tannins or white wine that has been oaked.
So when you're talking about the delivery of the wine, you're talking about getting the wine to hit different elements of the palate.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Because your tongue perceives these things in very specific areas, we can mechanically deliver the wine or the spirit to a part of the tongue to either lessen your perception. If, for instance, a wine is too tannic or too sweet or too acidic, we can lessen your perception of that wine. Or if something is lacking in acidity, it needs a bit of backbone to it, then we can deliver the wine to emphasise some acidity.
Well, let's have a look at that. We've got a Sauvignon Blanc glass over here. It's reasonably narrow, very long, but without a big bowl shape to it. What's going on there?
Well, what the shape of this glass does, and this is one of our best all-round tasting shapes, it's quite a generous capacity. It holds about a half bottle of wine, but the shape means that it delivers the wine in a thin stream from the tip of the tongue, so you'll pick up some sweetness. Then it goes down the middle of the tongue and hits the back of your tongue, back of your throat. What happens is it bypasses the acidity receptors.
So the wine goes down the centre of the tongue, avoids the acidity on the sides.
That's exactly right. What happens is it ends up at the back of the tongue, so you get a nice balance. Everything that's in within the wine, you don't get too much acidity, because Sauvignon Blanc is a nice, crisp, refreshing, acidic drink anyway. That's why people drink it, for the zing, for the zest. But some Sauvignons, when you're drinking them, they can be a bit too acidic. So we downplay the acidity, bring out the other things.
Okay, that's quite good. The other glass we've got here is a Pinot Noir glass. It's really quite a bulbous shape, just slightly wider at the top, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
What are you trying to do with this?
Well, for a red wine glass, you always want a bigger bowl anyway. Basically, the difference between white wines and red wines is that in the production process of red wines, the skins come into play, and sometimes the stalks even. So you're looking at an extra ingredient in red wine that isn't there in white wine. White wine is simply made from the flesh of the grape and the juice. So because of that extra ingredient, red wines do have another level of complexity. So you will always need a bigger bowl for a red wine glass. Having said that, this glass does much the same as the Sauvignon Blanc glass, in that it will direct the wine to the tip of the tongue, down the middle, and end up at the back. The way it does this is purely from the shape. It's just the gradient of the side of the bowl. It's all about how you hold the glass, how you hold your head, almost how you hold your arm as you're drinking. And again, I know this sounds difficult to imagine if you're just looking at a catalogue, thinking, well, why is that glass for Burgundy? Why is that glass for Bordeaux? But it's something you can try at home. A martini glass, if you imagine drinking from that, very straight-sided, V-shape, you hardly have to move your head, have to get up from the couch, and you can drink your martini. Compare that to a tall, skinny, straight-sided champagne flute, where you've got to really knock your head back and lift the glass up high to get drink from that. So that's what we're looking at. It's so purely mechanics.
Those long, narrow champagne flutes, they're a bit like that Sauvignon Blanc glass, aren't they, where it's shooting the champagne down the centre of your palate.
Yeah.
And not, because champagne's got quite a lot of acidity to it, hasn't it?
Champagne, although a fantastic drink, the acidity levels are so high. Within the Champagne region in France, it has more dentists per capita than any other country in the world because it's enamel stripping stuff if you drink it regularly.
Yeah.
The acidity is very much in evidence, so you can afford to downplay it.
Sometimes when you drink a real high acid wine, it feels like your enamel's dripping off your teeth sometimes. Yeah. Okay, and the third glass we've got here is a Cabernet Merlot glass.
Yep.
And it's, again, it's not as bulbous. It's still quite a big glass. And the at the end, it's about the same size opening. Is that right?
Yeah. This is a good contrast to the our Pinot Noir or Red Burgundy glass in that it's a very similar size bowl and exactly the same size aperture. The only difference is the shape.
You mean aperture, the amount that you get into your mouth?
Yeah. It's purely the contours of the bowl. When you're drinking wine from our Bordeaux glass, the wine will drop very gently and slowly onto the front half of your tongue. So what you're doing is you're picking up the fruits. You're emphasising some acidity, which you can afford to do because Cabernet as a grape is quite low in acidity. But what we're trying to do is stop the wine getting towards the back of your tongue, which is where you pick up the tannins.
Yes, and Cabernet is quite a tannic wine.
The tannins are already much in evidence, so we don't want to emphasise those anymore.
You can always tell tannins on a wine because if you rub your tongue over the roof of your mouth, you get that sort of gripping sensation.
Yeah.
Okay, but what I don't understand is I always swish the wine around my mouth and give it a bit of a slurp and do all sorts of terrible things to the wine.
Mm-hmm.
If you're trying to keep the wine in the centre of your palate, won't it get all swashed around? And what's going on there?
Yeah, that's a question that's often asked. When I said earlier that the tongue is actually quite a basic organ compared to the nose, which is a very sophisticated organ, the brain is a very lazy organ in that it likes its first impression. It's amazingly difficult to get your brain to make a second impression, to change its mind. So even if you're hanging upside down and swishing it around your mouth, your brain will still be thinking, well, no, I picked up acidity first. Yeah. So that's what we're doing. We're just giving you
first clocking,
the first recognition.
It's a bit like first impressions on... Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. Now that we've had a look at the three different glasses, what sort of things should you be looking for in a glass?
The things to look out for in any wine glass is, first of all, a good shape to the bowl. We call it the cut-off egg shape. So imagine your egg, you've sliced off the top. That's a good shape for a glass.
So you want it tempering and...
Yeah. Within that, it obviously can vary in size, but you need it going back in on itself. That's to keep the aromas in.
Yeah.
The worst thing you can drink wine from is something like a Paris goblet, which is so straight-sided, you lose all the aromas over the edge.
Yeah, and also, if you give it a bit of a swirl, it can, if it's shaped outwards, you can lose the wine onto your neighbour.
Yeah. And the next thing is to have a big capacity for that reason, that you need to be able to swirl your wine, to release the aromas, to smell the wine, to start enjoying the wine. So all of our glasses are very big. Deceptive, because they don't look big, but they will hold usually at least a half a bottle of wine.
Half bottle of wine, that's a good drink.
Pretty good, but obviously only fill it up to the widest point of the glass, or what we call the belly. So most of our glasses, that would be about of a third full.
Third full. And that's so you can swirl it around and get some oxygen into it.
And after that, after the good shape, the good size, you also need a cut polished rim.
What do you mean by that?
If you look at glasses in pubs, some restaurants, if you feel the rim, you can actually feel it's quite thick.
It's got a rolled lip almost to it.
It's the rolled rim, which is an economical way of finishing off a glass in the production process. What Riedel do, even with their entry-level glasses, we always do a cut polished rim. So you end up with a very fine lip to your glass. There's nothing worse than a rolled rim to a glass, because that acts as a barrier between you and the wine. Nothing should come between you and the wine.
Exactly. So how do you do that? Do you just cut it, and then why don't people cut their lips on that?
It would be razor sharp, yes, because it's sliced off with a laser. But what they do is they very gently and slowly heat it back up, and the glass or the lead crystal will melt just enough to seal it.
Okay, Martin, thanks very much. Just a quick one. What sort of wine tip would you recommend for us?
Well, as a glass seller, I would say, and this is a question I get asked a lot, buy one glass for the wine that you drink most of, because we do have an enormous range of glasses. So buy the one that you would drink the most, and also spend on one glass what you would spend on one bottle of wine.
Thanks very much, Martin.
And thank you very much.
Cheers.
Yes.
That was an interview with Martin Turner. I suggest you give different glasses a go and see if you can notice a difference. The main thing is, the wider the opening of the glass, the more it's going to affect the acidity, get to the sides where the acidity is. The narrower it is and the bigger the bulb, the more the wine's going to shoot to the back, so you're going to notice the bitterness more in the wine. See what you see. That ends the show. Next week we've got Ant McKenzie. He's the winemaker behind Spy Valley. They do some pretty fantastic wines. They're actually a New Zealand winery. It's a wee bit different from the UK wine scene, but they are available in the UK, and we interviewed him at the London International Wine Show. So cheers, and good drinking.